No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and we start another edition of the All Cardinals Show. This is All Cardinals as we talk about some of the most important things that have been going on as this week we enter the final week of the preseason. Thursday, the Arizona Cardinals will end their preseason slate on the road against the Denver Broncos, but we've had a few bits of news that have happened before then. Sunday night against the Oakland Raiders on the road, they struggled early but came back for a 30-23 victory over the Oakland Raiders to give the Arizona Cardinals their first preseason victory. Logan Thomas led them to the leading touchdown drive, with Marion Grice taking the ball in from 11 yards out to get the score. The offense struggled early on. The defense looked pretty good. And then they kind of clawed back. Back and forth. The Cardinals took the lead. The Raiders came back and tied. And then Logan Thomas with a couple of big plays by Ifeanyi Moma and got the touchdown, led the team down to the touchdown with Grice, getting the game winner. Also, after that, the biggest news was for the entire NFL is that as of Tuesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, all NFL teams had to get their rosters down to 75 players. That meant the Arizona Cardinals had to move, get basically say goodbye to 12 players, which we did. And they did that, and there are a couple of surprise names on the list. When we get started actually on who we talked about, we'll go through that list. And then we're going to talk. So what we've got tonight for you, or today, whenever it is you're listening, of course, we thank you as always for listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio, which is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading audio source and content. And you can get a free audiobook download right now if you visit audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds and you get yourself a free audiobook download that you can listen to anywhere. Again, that site is Audible Trial, not Audible Trail, but audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. Check it out. Take a look. It's a great service. I've used it myself. I like the audiobooks. It's great in particular when I take the kids on long trips. It keeps them quiet because they have something to listen to. So try it out. audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. So we're going to talk all Cardinals today, and we've got Seth Cox on the line with me. Mike, our co-host as always. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing great. Glad to have you back on. How does it feel to be, as of right now, it is 12 days from the regular season opener for the Arizona Cardinals. How jacked up are you getting for the actual regular season?
Until Sunday, I was getting really excited, and then Sunday happened, I was like, oh, crap. There's still a lot to work on.
Yes. Now, are you at the point now where you just cross your fingers every time there's the ball that snapped? Now, I don't worry so much now for preseason game four, because for the most part, there's going to be a bunch of guys. There's going to be young guys and then some guys who are probably not going to be playing on any NFL roster. So for me, at least, the part where you cross your fingers most about guys staying healthy, that part's pretty much done after three games. Is that kind of how you feel at this point?
Yeah, I was begging Bruce Arians to pull Carson Palmer out of the game about midway through the first quarter after they'd made a couple sandwiches on the pass rush with with Khalil Mack and Mario Edwards and the likes. I was just saying let's just call it a preseason for Carson at this point. So like you said, game four is just going to be interesting to watch these guys kind of fight out for those last, 10 spots spots on the roster, and see who really can stand out. And I think it'll be a good opportunity for Earl Watford to continue to show that he probably should start right tackle as well.
Well, what we got planned tonight in terms of topics, we're going to talk about the cuts. I'm going to give you that list. All you guys listening, I'm going to give you the list of the 12 players that the Cardinals have either cut or waived and injured, because there was one player. So they actually cut ties completely with 11 players, and one player was waived injured. Essentially what that means is that they're going through waivers. A team can claim them. If they go through waivers, they land on injured reserve, where they will remain there for the entire season unless the team reaches an injury settlement with the player, which frequently happens once they are considered healthy. In addition to that, we'll talk about, so we'll lead with the roster cuts, as that's the biggest topic for right now, and there's might be considered a couple of surprises on that list. Then we'll talk about the game that happened, as there might be some reason to panic, some reason to be concerned. Aside from that, we'll talk about what stood out, players who disappointed, all that everyday good stuff that we do every week. So we'll lead with that, and then we'll talk about what we're going to watch for on Thursday. So let me start by giving you the list of the 12 players. They made 11 moves on Monday, and they made a final decision on Tuesday with another player. I get the impression that the reason why they didn't make all 12 moves on Monday was perhaps they were looking to make a trade of some sort. I don't figure it was for the player who got cut today on Tuesday, but I imagine that it was to avoid making that cut, and probably were unsuccessful at it. So let's go down the list. And this first name might be the surprise of the group. You've got outside linebacker Lorenzo Alexander. You've got inside linebacker Glenn Carson, who was on the final 53 last year. You've got undrafted tackle Rob Crisp. You've got undrafted receiver Travis Harvey. Guard Nate Isles, who was added later in the offseason. Inside linebacker Edwin Jackson. Another inside linebacker, Andre Kirk, both of which were undrafted rookies. Veteran Shaquille Richardson, the U of A product, who was brought on in the offseason. Tight end, another undrafted rookie, Gannon Sinclair. Another undrafted rookie, Ryan Spadola, the receiver. Darren Woodard spent time with the Cardinals last year, the practice squad. And then also another veteran, punter Dave Zastadil. And it is official, Drew Butler won the punting competition. And that will be, I am sure, to the dismay of many Arizona Cardinals fans. I myself am a little less concerned overall, because I do have the belief that players can improve, so we'll have to wait and see, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So, Seth, give me your first reactions to what you saw on this cut list.
Disappointment that Zach's issues caused him to not be able to reclaim the job. I know a lot of people like to point to how average Drew Butler was last year during the regular season, and average is a very, you know, probably the term to use. You know, he wasn't great, he wasn't terrible, but he was average. But then he basically crapped the bed, you know, in week 16 and then in the playoffs. And, you know, some people say, oh, that's what you're judging him on and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, no, you're judging him on the fact that Zastadil the year before put up a really, really solid year. And then Drew Butler came in and just was average. And, you know, for the Cardinals who hang their hat on defense and big plays, even when it was without Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton, That offense is still big plays, and big plays are easier to do when you're winning the field position battle, and Butler kind of, you know, couldn't do that, and it's not Zastadil's fault. Injuries and age just caught up with him, so that was sad. Alexander, that's interesting. I think as bad as their special teams coverage units were at times last year, it kind of makes sense, I guess, because he was the guy when he was healthy, you know, right? And he never really he never really stood out. So, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. And let's be honest, both of these moves were motivated by cash because at the end of the day, if you have a veteran and a young player at the same position who are playing at the same level, you're going to go with the young player because it's going to save you so much money, especially with Zapata and Lorenzo. I think I saw somewhere like $3.5 million they saved, or something crazy like that.
Yeah, so it was more than $3 million saved against the cap. Now, the Zapata one, obviously, that would be the most surprising for Cardinals fans. However, if you happen to be listening to local sports radio, if you listen to Doug and Wolf on Tuesday morning, I think Doug Franz actually said it best, and you kind of noticed it. In years past, when Zacidil, a year or two ago, when he punted the ball exploded off his foot. The ball actually exploded off his foot, and that was gone. You didn't notice it. It was gone. So between that, he had the groin injury last year, which ended up on IR. And Butler, you know, he had a couple of picks blocked, which kind of, plus the really bad game in the playoffs. But let's be honest, he wasn't the only one to have a really bad game in the playoffs. So it just kind of mounted. And I mean, he's got the pedigree. His dad is Kevin Butler, Hall of Fame kicker. So, I mean, he knows his stuff. I've actually had his dad tweet me a couple of times on how much he believes that Drew deserves that shot. And it's interesting how fans' perspective is when Bruce Arians said a couple of weeks ago that it was neck and neck in the competition. Nobody thought he was serious, but here we are. You know, if they're about the same, you go with the younger, cheaper one, especially one who has been with the, you know, who saw some. He didn't have every bad game. He was not as consistent as he could have been, but he still really, that was basically his second year punting in the NFL. He had one other season a couple years back, and now he seems to have the job, and all he's got to do is just be consistent is the main thing. He doesn't have to be otherworldly, although we're used to seeing that in the NFC West. He's okay. In terms of Lorenzo Alexander, I honestly was fairly surprised because of what he does. And you saw it in the preseason. He's finally healthy, and he was all over the place on special teams. But when you've got a $2 million cap hit, and he at least almost all the offseason was in the base defense as the starter at outside linebacker across from Alex Okafor. But over the last couple of weeks, Lamar Woodley took him over, and it makes sense, a guy that's going to be specialized and basically on the bench. And I think a lot of that decision was once Shaq Riddick got healthy and they saw a little bit what he could do, Lorenzo Alexander became expendable because you keep him, then you have to cut someone else on there because you weren't going to keep eight outside linebackers or six outside linebackers when you only play two at any one time. And so it really, I think it was Shaq got healthy and he looked promising enough that they decided to go with the younger guy who has a potentially high upside with the pass rush.
Well, yeah, and like you said, Shaq is a guy, I think he got like 26, 25 snaps against Oakland, and he's a guy that is kind of like a baby gazelle right now. He doesn't really know what to do with his body, but he's got a lot of bounce out there and athleticism, and he's got those young legs, and you know, you can tell Lorenzo knows where to be, knows what to do, and as you said, on special teams, he's always around the ball, but he's not always making the plays, and I think that's kind of where you kind of just have to make a call on that. Like I said, to me, both these moves, I don't know how much better Butler had been in the preseason, but both these moves screamed, financial type things to me, and And it makes sense. Like I said, if it's close, you go with the young guy and let him save some money.
Well, and I think there's something we're going to see here also in Final Cuts too. We're going to see this same thing happen with Matt Shaughnessy. And it's not so much about his play as it is about depth, his salary, and the emergence of Josh Morrow, who has suddenly started taking his first-team snaps. In a couple of the formations the Cardinals do, when they go dime, they have a couple of bigger dime sets, where instead of going with the two down linemen and then two outside linebackers, they essentially go with a third D lineman who's kind of versatile like that, like Shaughnessy, who can play both D end, so it's both a 5 or a 9 technique there. And that's what Shaughnessy was doing a couple weeks ago. Josh Morrow, who has all of a sudden turned into in the last over camp, not only plays defensive end, I think Arian said he can play 3 technique, 5 technique, and 9 technique out there on the edge, where Shaughnessy did, which, again, younger, cheaper, explosive-type player, probably bumped Shaughnessy off the edge of the rotation.
Well, like you said, Morrow, I mean, again, you're getting basically equal, if not higher upside. Maybe not as... Maybe they aren't as quality players because they haven't done it over a 16-game NFL season before, but you're getting similar production and, you know, they have higher upside, and so I think that's where, like you said, Morrow, in the same sense, you know, like I said, Shaq, and then, of course, Drew Butler, so it's going to be interesting to see kind of the final cuts and see how things, you know, change from there.
Another name on that list that some Cardinals fans might be surprised at is that of inside linebacker Glenn Carson, who made the team, impressed the coaching staff a great deal last offseason in training camp as an undrafted rookie, made the team, didn't really do much other than special teams. Late in the season, started to get some defensive snaps in place of Minter, in part, I'm sure now more and more as we get more and more details about that injury that Minter suffered through last year, and it took him half the season before he could even do a push-up. I respect that kid more and more for what he did, but then Carson actually got the start alongside Minter in the regular season finale. But he wasn't really anything special. He wasn't particularly fast. He wasn't particularly strong. He's more about smarts. And one thing that Bruce Arians said in the offseason, particularly at inside linebacker, he wanted to get faster. And so they brought in what felt like a dozen inside linebackers. They didn't draft any, but they brought in a whole bunch. They added Sean Witherspoon in free agency and just brought in a slew of undrafted rookies to see if any of them, throw them all at the wall and see if any of them stick. And it looks like it's come down to, well, it has come down to, but kind of what they expected, because they ended up, you've got Alani Fua, who looks like he has the inside track right now for the roster, and Gabe Martin. Glenn Carson just became expendable. You know, I don't see, he's just a decent football player, smart football player, but didn't have the athleticism or the upside that these other guys did.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a... You hate saying this, but it's kind of the truth. He's kind of a guy, you know, and there's that term in football, just a guy, you know, jag. And that's what he was. He was a jag. He's just another guy. That's not a shot at him, but there's, you know, the NFL and the failed NFL careers are littered with, are just littered with Glenn Carsons, and you know, that's not a knock on him. He'll probably get up or get some offers from a, you know, couple teams and probably hang around for a couple years. I mean, hell, he could hang around another 5 or 6 years, but he's not a player that, when you're trying to build something new and you know, upgraded a position, you can't have him as, you know, one of those building blocks because he is, like you said, he's just kind of there.
Other than that, maybe Shaquille Richardson would surprise. He really didn't do much, and he doesn't have much of a he doesn't have a whole lot of league credit. You know, reputation is his basically his career has been that of being hurt. Other than that, I mean, Edwin Jackson got some publicity for his pound cake story. It looked like he impressed early on, but clearly you had Gabe Martin and Alana Ifua that really kind of stood out from the other guys. And with as many inside linebackers that they had, you were going to see at least a couple of them. As you see, three of them got cut in this first round. Any other notable cuts to you out of that? Or is it mostly... obviously, the cut to 75. These are pretty much usually young guys who won't make it on any team and might get tryouts next year.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could see Carson get, you know, a call somewhere because he has some film. I think Zoe ends up on a team because, you know, obviously he's a
I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back in Washington where he spent his entire career beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, something simple as that. You know, other than that, I mean, not really. I mean, honestly, the name, they're mostly fake to me. Like, that's one of those jokes we have when we do a lot of the draft podcasting is, a lot of these names just seem like they're fake and made up. same thing with the Cardinals cuts here. They get down to 75. I'm pretty sure a lot of them were just fake names and they weren't even real players.
So let's move ahead then to... oh, and the other one that was notable was Rob Crisp. And not necessarily for anything that he did other than the fact that he was... and this was something that Kenton Summers reported a couple months ago... And I wrote about on as well on Revenge of the Birds was the you can always kind of tell what hopes or what the undrafted rookies they believe in. Rob Crisp was one of those guys. NFL teams, I believe it's $86,000 they're allowed to use in signing bonuses to sign their undrafted rookies. $17,000 of that went to Alani Fua, and $15,000 went to Rob Crisp. So that tells you. That I mean, probably from a football standpoint, among the operator, the personnel staff, that they're disappointed, that they wanted more from him, or hoped that he would show a little bit more. And you know, as much as we saw the offensive tackle struggle, you could see that he's not going to make it. And that surprises me because I thought if there was going to be a tackle gone, it would have been Cameron Bradfield. But I guess he gets to go on to get in there for that final preseason game rather than Crisp.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of it, I mean, you wonder how much of it had to do with the fact that Massey got suspended and they kind of had to shake up their entire process and, you know, all of a sudden now they're a guy that you and I thought was a possible cut and Bradley Fowle is starting at right tackle and so all of a sudden you're like juggling your entire offensive line and things of that nature. The deck was stacked against them with, you know, obviously Massey and Humphreys there and the emergence of Earl Watford. But I think the fact that they had to move Sal back over to right tackle, I think it just hurt Crisp altogether.
Let's talk about the game. Obviously, the biggest story coming out of Sunday night was it time to hit the panic button on the offensive line, or is this just a case where we saw at least in a preseason style the emergence of a superstar in Khalil Mack? Mack, you know, he got to Carson Palmer a couple of times, sacked him twice. He pretty much dominated every bit of the first team Cardinals offense. But, I mean, is it time to... Everyone keeps talking about the potential. And that's we've talked about it as well with all the playmakers they got. And we talked about the improved offensive line. But then again, as of right now, two guys, Bradley Sal and Ted Larson, who we thought were probably going to be dead in the water in terms of the roster, are both starting. is it time to panic, or was all that off-season hype suddenly gone down the toilet, or are we just bringing ourselves a little closer back to reality?
I think it's just that reality check that we probably all needed. You know, we went from basically having the 85 Bears reincarnate based on comments and, you know, and ideas from fans, to now, you know, you see that this is still a team that has question marks at several positions on the offensive line. You still have a quarterback that is a good NFL quarterback that needs to be kept clean. And I know that sounds funny, and everybody's going to say, well, you know, everybody needs to be kept clean, but...
Palmer's the difference, because when he's kept clean, he can be up there among the elite quarterbacks in terms of numbers.
Exactly, and that's what the difference is. You look at, and I know a lot of people don't like Pro Football Focus, and so you know, you can take all their information with a grain of salt, but you look at what they have, a pressure, you know, kind of productivity quarterback rating system, and you look at who the top guys are from 2014, and the names are Roethlisberger, Rodgers, you know, Brady, Brees, you know, the top quarterbacks. And then you go down to the, you know, middle and end, and you see everybody else, and that's kind of what Palmer is. He is, as you said, he's one of those guys, when kept clean, he's as good, if not better than everybody. But you saw it on Sunday, when he has to move his feet, when he has to, you know, when he has to maneuver more than just moving upward back in a pocket, but when he's having to avoid the rush and really make moves, he's not, you know, that great of a quarterback. And that's what happened a lot in 2013. And I think that's what's going to kind of happen early. If Bradley's foul, even if Earl Watford is the guy, I think you're still going to see some issues, because it's going to be Earl's first real NFL game. Like, he's never played an NFL game before. So, he, you know, it's still going to be some learning curve, but I think it'll be less of a pain than what you saw with Bradley foul on Sunday. And let's not, you know, kill Bradley foul too much. Because, you know, Jared Veldier got his ass.
Yes, he did. He did. There are a couple plays where Veldier, and this is now, that's going on a couple of weeks straight. Now, the one play against San Diego, you know, Arian swore that Ingram was offsides, but then you saw, then we saw Veldier get completely dominated on a couple of plays. And you're like, wait, that's not supposed to happen. Again, Khalil Mack. I don't know if it's too early to jump on this hype train, but he looks really, really good.
Yeah. Well, but there was one play where Mack was taking advantage of Bradley Sal and DJ Humphries, excuse me. Mario Edwards Jr. just kind of bullied Veldier back into the quarterback, and that was kind of where they both had half the sack there. And it was probably on Palmer. He pulled the ball back on its first read. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I said this on Twitter, and then it was funny because Kine came out and said it, and then the PFF grades kind of backed it up. But Ted Larson was the best offensive lineman in that game on Sunday night, and that's... I know that angers a lot of people. It's like, no, not Ted Larson. He's awful.
He can't be. Either that's good for Larson. Hey, he did it. Or that really means everyone was terrible.
Well, and I think it was kind of both. I mean, Larson played okay, but everybody else was not good.
We see it with Shipley at center. It seems like sort of his issue is strength there against big, strong nose tackles like a Dan Williams. Now, obviously, Dan Williams is very talented. We all know that. As Cardinals fans, we've seen the type of havoc he can wreak. However, It seemed like anything that dealt with strength, physically, he was just unable to match up. But moves around better, but doesn't hold up as well. And that's... We'll have to see how that goes in pass protections, because what we've seen is, you know, last year we had some issues, at least for pressure on the right. As long as you have... If you give Carson a decent pocket to step up into, even if you get rush off the edge, he can step up and make a quick throw. If Shipley's going to get beat with regularity on with strong nose tackles, that's going to be an issue.
Yeah, it's going to be an issue, and he's going to get it right off the bat, because, I mean, New Orleans has some talented defensive tackles in Akeem Hicks, and the other kid's name is escaping me. I was just going to look it up. John Jenkins. They're both, you know, talented guys, but they're also just massive, massive guys. So, I mean, it's not going to... And then, you know who's played really well in Chicago is Mr.
Will
Fort.
Sutton.
So, yeah, Sweet Willie T is living up to the hype, and he's going to, you know, and that might be a good kind of indicator, because you're going to go from Akeem Hicks, who's like 6'5", 330, 340, and John Jenkins, I think, is like 6'2", and 350. And then you're going to go to Will Sutton, who's, what, 6'1", and maybe 300 pounds?
He's kind of a Darnell Dockett-ish build for a tackle.
So maybe that will show us, you know, where Shipley, you know, if that's where Shipley's struggling. Because if he can hold up against, you know, the Bears, but then struggle against Saints. But, yeah, I think the offensive line in general, and not just in pass protection. Again, I said don't worry about it, especially when you're talking about, you know, at least two guys that are going to be gone from the lineup in hopefully week 4 or week 5. But, I mean, like we just said, Shipley hasn't looked all that good either. So maybe you're talking about 3/5 of the line being different by, you know, week 6 in the season. And then you're going to talk about having to reinvent that continuity and understanding. And also with the running backs, it's a process. I just think with the emphasis that the front office has put on building that, you know, quote-unquote dominant offensive line, and the fact that it still hasn't happened.
Well, and the running game has been virtually non-existent, too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why people are going, okay, what, you know, maybe we were getting ahead of ourselves. And I don't think it's that right now as much as it is. That's just, you know, that's part of kind of finding the way things work in the preseason. And it's, you know, it's telling your offensive lineman, hey, go win. We're not gonna help you. Go win on an island. And if you can't, well, then, you know, during the season, that's really going to handcuff me in my play calling. But, you know, we'll figure it out for 3 weeks, you know, on the right side, or, you know, 6 weeks up the middle, or whatever it is with Mike Iupati. But, you know, I think that's just kind of where it's at right now, is that you have to understand that it's not going to go smoothly when you're without 2/5 of your starting offensive line already. And there's still, you know, while Shipley is the starter on depth, I think Arians even said, you know, that their starting center position is still up in the air, and I don't think that because, you know, of how well Finline's playing, but just because there's still a question of whether or not Shipley can hold up and be the guy to anchor in that offensive line. And I think we kind of saw that, like you said, on Sunday, and I think it was a good, you know, reality check. Like, hey, this isn't a 16-0 team. There's a lot of flaws. But you know what? They're good enough that they can be a contender once they start to get those flaws, you know, ironed out.
It wasn't all bad. We got to see John Brown look even better. He was contested. It was a nice throw, but it wasn't just he had a bunch of separation. He had to go up and get and made himself a pro's catch. You saw him sort of draw a penalty in the end zone to bring them down, except for, then it got called uncatchable. So, but yeah, we saw the positive John Brown. We saw the run defense, the first team run defense, absolutely stifling, giving up only 1 yard rushing in the first half. And basically, we didn't get that. There wasn't, and we got to see that. Well, guess what? James Betcher's going to blitz a lot. He looks a lot like Todd Bowles, and he's going to blitz from everywhere. And so we got to see a little bit more of that. And then in the second half, after things looked ugly, Drew Stanton, drove it down for a touchdown. You saw Philip Sims. Then you saw Logan Thomas, who with the 2-minute drill tie game had an opportunity to win the game. What'd he do? He makes two, he gets early on, he gets hit. He gets hurt a little bit. He gets a little banged up. So he gets face masked and he gets a little rolled up on his leg. But still makes, with the help of Ipone Moma, he finally got some help from his teammates. Goes down the field, and guess what? They score the winning touchdown. So there was definitely things to be positive about. Were there other positives that, what were the players for you that stood out in that game?
I think all three of the, backup quarterbacks all look sharp. You can see Stanton understands that he had to get the ball out, especially since they had a lot of the starting unit. I saw a lot of people say they had the whole starting unit of the Raiders defense out. That's not accurate, but they had a lot of starting unit out there, and you could see that Drew understood maybe even more than Carson, like, I'm not getting hit, so let's get this ball out. So you saw a lot of clicks. You saw a lot of, if you saw a lot of stuff in the intermediate, and that was intelligent by him. I think Philip Sims, you and I joked about it a little bit, but I think Philip Sims continues to show you that he understands where the ball can go if his first read's not open.
He was a dink and dunk king, a dump off and hand off king on Sunday.
And he has been really all postseason. I think he's completed one pass over 10 yards in the air the entire time or something like that.
Was, fourth team receivers not making plays, but in terms of in the pocket, making a read and taking a shot down the field, we really haven't seen that. What we've seen him is, okay, there's some pressure, let me get away from pressure, roll right, chuck the ball down the field, and almost make a play. So, but at least what you see, just the eye test tells you, hey, he gets it. He's poised. He's got good enough arm strength. He has his capability. So there's a lot to like.
Yeah, and you wonder how much, not of a defense he can read, but how much he can go through progressions right now, comfortably, because it seems like if his first read's not open, he knows where his check down is, and that's where he's getting the ball. And that's not a bad thing. A lot of quarterbacks can make, a career out of that. And something I said on Twitter, and I mean this in the best possible way, but if you're the Cardinals, or a Cardinals fan, and you're counting on Philip Sims or Logan Thomas to be your quarterback of the future, you're probably setting the bar way too high.
At least Thomas, you see some really elite physical tools, and you see flashes of wow, but still the erratic play is there. Sims, you're just like, you are at best a game manager. No, he's not RG3. No, he's not Russell Wilson. So please stop talking about him like that, like I've seen people do. Stop it. Stop.
Well, but you know what he could be is he could be who's the guy that was in Seneca Wallace?
He could be Seneca Wallace. He could be Tarvaris Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. He could be a guy like that, with that athleticism. But that's the thing is, it's so rare that an undrafted free agent becomes anything in the NFL.
Not just any undrafted free agent. He was a tryout player. So nobody wanted, so nobody drafted and no one wanted him in the draft. Then nobody wanted him when they signed undrafted rookies. And he got a, he happened to get a tryout and impressed.
Yep, and that's, and so, you know, people will be like, oh, Tony Romo. But again, Tony Romo was a priority free agent. He got picked up right away. And then he spent time on the practice squad. Everybody's like, oh, you can't put Phillip Sims on the practice squad. No, no, that's exactly what you do. Is you put somebody like Phillip Sims on the practice squad and let them get the repetitions and learn and not take up a roster spot, because like we saw with Logan Thomas last year, there's no way that these guys are going to be ready to play in the NFL in 2015. Like, if you're counting on them to play, then you might as well just, you know, throw away the season and, you know, tank for whoever the top quarterback prospect's going to be next year. But anyway, I thought Sims did really well in what he was asked to do. He's efficient with his decisions, and he understands where his checkdowns are and what he needs to do with the ball in that sense. Logan Thomas, I think, on the other hand, he understood the urgency of what he was doing. Not only was he, you know, trying to win the game, but he was trying to make a case that, you know what, I can play in the NFL. I do deserve this roster spot. Stop with all this Phillip Sims stuff. And I think you saw that. I think both guys went out and did exactly what they needed to do. Defensively, the Cardinals are, they have the ability up front and on the back end to be special. The question still remains, can they find a guy that can rush the passer and win in one-on-one situations consistently to allow them to reach that, you know, quote-unquote elite level of defense? You know, Calais Campbell is probably still their best pass rusher. Maybe I'll look for overtake them this year, but, you know, in a 3-4, unless your defender, you know, that defensive end is J.J. Watt, you know, you want an outside linebacker to be your best pass rusher. So, you see the problems. I think everybody knows the problem by this point. I mean, we're 3 games in already, and there's been no sack, I think, from the first team defense at all. But there's been, what they do well is create havoc for quarterbacks, and they still don't allow anybody to do anything in the run game. And so that's important, especially in this division. You know, it may not be important in game one and maybe not important in game two, but going forward from there, it's gonna be, you know, key to the season.
And other things that were positive. Now, I was impressed by Thomas because it wasn't the dink and dunk. He had to make plays down the field. Then he did. He was helped. By Ifeanyi Moma. But the contrast is of that, because in 2 straight other preseason games, his teammates let him down. And I kind of went down this in the other podcast, and I mentioned a couple of articles that I've written on RevengeTheBirds.com. And in the first game, Britton Golden drops a touchdown pass that he should have caught. Wasn't a hard pass. He just needs to hold on. He bobbled it. Jerron Brown, the interception that Logan Thomas has was, he rifled it in. But it basically bounced off his shoulder, bounced off his chest, and lay into a defender's hands. And then Ifeanyi Moma last week, doesn't turn the right way. He turns the right way. It's a touchdown, and so he's got 2 touchdowns. And no one's talking about Logan Thomas being beat out by Phillip Sims. I don't think anyone's talking about that at all. This time, Ifeanyi Moma makes 2 fantastic plays. The one, after the sack, so it's 2nd and 16. He gets the ball in the middle of the field, which is, you know, a pretty reasonable throw that you want to do, a very normal throw to make when you've got 2nd and really long, try to pick up half those yards. And Moma then drags several defenders all the way to the sticks, picks up the first down. Moma then, and people talks about, you know, as if Logan Thomas had just, you know, was just locked on Moman, was bailed out by him on the throw that went for 38 yards. That was Moman knowing where to be in that zone, because you see right where he's at, there are four defenders almost exactly 5 yards away from him on any side of him. Logan Thomas puts the ball right on the money. He takes a licking because he turned up the field and went, as opposed to going down, which, you know, so that wasn't like Logan was leading him to the defenders. Moma turned around, took a couple of steps, and then took contact, went through it, and took the ball down the field even further for 38 yards. It was a combination of, those are pro throws. Those are pro clutch throws that Tom was making, and he got help from a teammate who made a case for himself after some gaffes. He didn't look all that particularly great in the first two preseason games, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think I think Moma had his best game, and a lot of people can say what they want about, like, oh, he was going to make the roster, blah, blah, blah. Dude was in on the final drive of the third preseason game for a reason. That's because the coaching staff and management was kind of still waiting for him to show something. They've seen it in practice, but he never really did it in the game. And he's had some, you know, boneheaded moments expected, not saying it's not expected, but they needed to feel like they could trust him and that he could be a guy that, you know, is more than just a 6'7", you know, former basketball player who can jump really high and, you know, you can throw the ball up to. And he kind of did that on that final drive. He's still a basically dreadful blocker in the run game, and that's probably putting it nicely.
Well, yeah, I love the quote. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but he gets his ass kicked dignified because of the effort he puts into his blocking. It's not because he doesn't try, but he really tries, and it's a dignified ass kicking, basically.
Yep, that's what Bruce said. Bruce said, you know, he's not afraid to stick his nose in there and get his ass kicked, and he does it with dignity. And you know, that's kind of the truth on this one. I mean, he's just not a very good blocker right now, and that's, you know, that's part of the game that's going to come to him. Their tight ends in general, and again, Khalil Mack is a special player, so maybe take it with a grain of salt, but their tight ends in general just got just run roughshod by the Raiders defense. So, again, you know, not to harp on the bad, but the lack of running game, I think, had a lot to do with they were trying to run a lot of those stretch plays to the outside and you know, run in that, you know, that five gap between Vildier and the tight end, and, you know, it just didn't work out that game. So, you know, but I think we continue to see also, and we probably haven't even mentioned him because everybody expects him to play so well, but I think we continue to see just how good Tyrann Mathieu is and you know, how he can kind of be a special player in the NFL if he stays healthy. So,
yes, Mathieu looked really good. Jerrod Powers was in on a couple of plays. There's a really a lot to like about that secondary, and just watch out. Everyone talked about Patrick Peterson and the contract he got. Tyrann Mathieu's going to want to get paid. I've heard him say it. He wants that money. So it's going to be funny here, you know, in another year and a half, what type of contract he commands, especially when you see a guy like Cam Chancellor who's holding out. You're getting safeties, you know, decent safeties getting paid big money. Whew! I mean, that's a conversation for another time, but there's going to be a reason, because if he stays healthy, he can be a game changer out there.
Yeah, and he's gonna get probably 540 with like 25 guaranteed, unless some safeties just start getting paid a lot. But that's probably where he'll be, between 40 and 50 million over 5 years. But I think the other guy that because you mentioned Josh Morrow kind of in the beginning of the show, and the other guy we'd be remiss not to mention how well he played, and how, you know, I've mentioned him a couple times, but Kareem Martin. I think he's starting to put it together at that outside linebacker position, and it is difficult for him because he's not, you know, he didn't really do it in college, and then last year they made him gain weight so he could be a
be Calais, you know, Campbell. That's what they wanted to be. Yeah, Calais Campbell.
Be Calais Campbell, and that, you know, that really hasn't worked out. And he needs to be, you know, kind of a strong side outside linebacker who can play the run, but then guess what he can do? He can rush the passer, and I think he's starting to use that athleticism to become that player. So we'll see what happens and then how that goes. But I, you know, he got his first sack finally, and so I think we're getting a little closer to kind of figuring out what that outside linebacker rotation is going to look like. Because I think it's going to be Okafor and Woodley, and then you're going to get Kareem coming in on passing downs. And they may not even take Woodley out. They might take, you know, Corey Redding or who's the older guy? Frosty Rucker. Jeez. You know, or even just slide those guys down and take Rodney Gunter out. So, I mean, they have a lot of options, and I think Martin is putting himself as the quote-unquote first young pass rusher out there, because we'll consider Okafor in his third season kind of the veteran now, because outside of Lamar Woodley, there's not really a veteran at all.
Nope, not at all, not anymore. Anyone that stood out more as a disappointment? I personally thought, you know, the most disappointing part, I don't know if you're going to be really disappointed in Bradley Saal, dude, just, you know, he gets overpowered, and we've seen this from time over and over again.
Well, and it's something that you and I have talked about, and, you know, and it's something that you and I have discussed in, you know, private before, and Coach Arians has a affinity for players. He just does. And he keeps them and uses them and kind of runs them into the ground. We kind of thought with Rashard Mendenhall in the first year, and then we kind of thought with Larry Foote last year, and I think we're kind of seeing it with Bradley Saal now. Like he develops relationships with guys, and he trusts them and believes in them, and then he doesn't want to move them until they force his hand. And I think that's kind of Saal this year. I think a lot of people can see that he's not cut out to be a starter in the NFL. He's fine to come in and back up for, you know, a half a game or a couple series, but I think after Sunday, yeah, I mean, mentioning him as a disappointment would just be kind of an understatement about how bad his game was on Sunday.
For me, the bigger disappointment, though, was Shipley, the way he was physically, especially, you know, we kind of seen more of that. If you could combine Shipley and Lyle's strengths, you'd have a dang good center. But for a guy that they brought in that we probably thought was supposed to be the center, who's supposed to be the starting center, then, you know, it's not what you wanted to see. I think likewise, you didn't see quite. I mean, on one play, you were disappointed in Patrick Peterson, but it looked like he slipped, which could have been the turf. I don't remember what part of the field it is, but that field isn't good for football.
Yeah, and let's be completely honest here. Patrick is always going to struggle with guys that run good routes because he freelances so much. And he tries to use his athleticism so much. So he's always going to struggle with good route runners. And even though Amari Cooper's a rookie, he's a very, very good route runner. And we saw that, like, just right off the bat. And, you know, it shouldn't be a shot at Patrick. It just should be, you know, a tip of the cap to how good Amari Cooper is already. I agree with you on Shipley. It kind of, you know, we hit on it earlier. It's just kind of a frustrating situation where you're like, okay, you know, you brought this guy in to be your center, and he, you know, doesn't look like he can handle the position. Who's next? You know, oh, wait, we know who's next. It's Lyle Finley. Like, I don't know, like, the devil you know, as the saying goes, the devil you know is usually better than the devil you don't, and I think Cardinals fans are finding that out, a la Levi Brown to Bradley Sal.
Anybody else in particular for you stood out as a guy that you wished you had seen more of?
I continue to want to see, and I tweeted this out, nobody responded, so maybe nobody even knows, but I want to see more of Marcus Golden, and not in the sense like, yeah, I want to see him finish some plays, like he's around the ball a lot, but he's not finished, you know, it's the same thing he was in college. He's a motor guy who is around a lot of plays. The difference is the NFL is a little bit faster, so he's not making, you know, the plays. But why are his snaps going down so much, right? So he was at 42 the first game, and then he went down to 37, and it's like, okay, the guys that are supposed to be the guys, you know, kind of get the playing time in game three, and he only played 16 snaps. And I, you know, I noted it down. He was out there a couple times with the first team, and they had him dropping into coverage. Like, they didn't even have him rushing the passer.
I think this is going, it goes by this. I think he has become their first team outside linebacker sub when they go to dime, just like with Rodney Gunder. So I think, if I had to go back, I think that's what has happened. On dime downs, Gunter comes out, and Golden comes in. And so Golden's only playing on, and not even all of them, but he's playing on some of those rush parts. And they didn't have him, it didn't appear, playing much on after that. Probably giving Woodley more reps, and then giving Kareem Martin more reps. And I think that's more of giving them the, almost the more the starters treatment, so they're not out there too long, since they're expecting them to make bigger contributions during the season.
Which is interesting, because, you know, Gunter I can kind of understand, because, you know, as you and I have talked about before, he's a nose tackle now.
Like, yeah.
He's not going to be a defensive end player, so he's not really going to make a ton of plays, quote unquote. You know, he's not going to be the sexy player that everybody was hoping he was going to be. This year, he's going to kind of be just the guy in the middle that's taking up space, and he's doing a really good job of it. I mean, the reason the run defense is so good is because of the guys on the front line, and the run defense continues to be great. So he's obviously doing his job. But I guess I just expected more reps from a guy that really hasn't done anything all preseason in Golden, right? Like, I think he's got three of those hurry things that they marked down.
Yeah.
I think he's got one, like, quarterback hit or something like that. But I don't know. I just expected more from a guy that really hasn't done anything yet, to see where he is as he's kind of going forward, to see how good he is going to be.
What are you looking forward to moving ahead to the final preseason game? What will you be watching in particular? I think one thing that everyone will be watching is to see the comparison of Phillip Sims and Logan Thomas. Sims, I don't know if there's some, if I don't know if this is, you can officially read something into this. Does thou this by having Sims start the game officially mean he is a little bit ahead of Logan Thomas? I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I'm also interested in watching Earl Watford at right tackle, because who are they playing? Denver, right?
Playing Denver, yes.
Yeah, so he's going to go up against Shane Ray and Shaquille Barrett, and they have been really good in the preseason rushing the passer, like really good. So rest in peace, Phillip Sims, as Bradley Sal is your left tackle. So Ray and Barrett will probably have a feast on their hands. But, I think it's important to see what Watford has in this instance. And then I'm interested in the continual battle between Fua and Martin to see who the guy that gets the final position. But, and here's what I said, and I've written it, and I'm not sure how you feel about it, but I think for me, Martin has been better in the games, but I think Fua offers more overall and can do so many different things that his versatility is probably more useful and important at this time. Like, you know, knock on wood, and I don't think he's going to play, but, you know, if something happened to Kevin Minter, I think you keep Gabe Martin. But since they have Minter and he seems healthy and is productive, there's really no reason to keep him at this point. But I am interested to watch that one. From there, I don't know. Maybe can Chris Johnson still run at all? Maybe.
I really want to see him play because based on what I was looking at, it might be hard, especially if they put Kerwin Williams back there at kick returner. I'm wondering, is Chris Johnson going to be able to make the roster? Because if Kerwin Williams finds a niche, guess what? That means the end of either Stephon Taylor or the end of Chris Johnson. And we've said numerous times, we don't see how Stephon Taylor doesn't make the team based on what he does, where he is on the roster.
Right. And, so, I mean, that's going to be interesting. Does Johnson have any juice in the league? Because I don't think, in this, you know, this might just be me, but I don't think I'd want to go into the season with a stack of Ellington, David Johnson, and Kerwin Williams, like the top three back. The idea of Ellington, David Johnson, and Chris Johnson is slightly more...
Sounds better. It does. It sounds better.
it's just a more comforting feeling. And it's not a shot at Kerwin or anything, but when we're talking about Kerwin Williams versus Chris Johnson, you know, one guy's done it for 8 seasons in the NFL, and one guy did it twice, you know, in 2 games. So,
exactly.
It's just, you know. But, yeah, I think the main draw and what everybody will be watching really will be Sims versus Thomas. And I'm not joking when I say, like, Sims could be in trouble because Bradley Fowle's starting at left tackle because he's going to have to stop Shane Ray and Shaq Barrett. And they have really, really dominated opposing offensive linemen so far this preseason. So that's something that I'm interested in watching because I think it's going to – I openly wonder why DJ Humphries is starting.
Make the kid earn it. I'm sure that's what it is. He's been really inconsistent, and I haven't read the quote yet today, but apparently in the last 10 days, DJ Humphries has started to get it. I think he's been getting the tough love treatment by Arians. While Humphries probably thought that he was going to, when the news came down from Massey, Humphries probably thought that it was going to be his spot, and so was expecting it and wasn't working for it. While Bradley, you know how Bradley does. Bradley works his tail off. So, yeah, that's what I expect. I want to see, you know, what really is. I want to see some them play well. Since it's a bunch of everyone, I'd like to see the Cardinals win. Since you're not going to be seeing any of the starters, you want to see them all execute and to be able to do stuff and to see some separation. You don't want to, I mean, for the worst thing, you love to have debate, but you want someone, those roster players, you want the roster play, the bubble players, to separate themselves and say, okay, yeah, he's making the team.
No, you do. I think that's true. Like, you'd like to see Britton Golden make a play. You'd like to see, like I said, Fuller or Martin make a play. Maybe even Ed Stinson or Alameda Te'amu or Matt Shaughnessy. I think, you know, Shaughnessy's been good. But, you know, what you want to see one of those guys kind of make a play. Because, like you said, Josh Morrow's made play. You know, he looks like he's going to be a hard cut right now. You know, like I said, Alani Fua, because of his versatility and his ability to drop into coverage, he looks like, you know, Gabe Martin's going to have to make some plays. Maybe Chris Clemens has to make some plays. I don't know. You keep him on your 53-man roster, so I do find that interesting because I think that talks about what we said earlier. You know, he's kind of a true safety, whereas Buchanan and Matthew go into kind of linebacker and cornerback roles, respectively. And so all of a sudden you have, you know, Jefferson, Johnson, and Clemens back there at three safety positions. And then, but you also have Buchanan and Matthew out there. So you have five safeties on the field at once. And so maybe Clemens, if he plays, he needs to get a, you know, he needs to get out there and make a play and, you know, show that he deserves to be on this roster.
And that'll about wrap it up for tonight, everybody, or, you know, probably today when you're listening to it, since we are not streaming live. This has been another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. This was the all-Cardinals show. Because of the shortened week, we will not have a preview show with Mile High Report, someone from Mile High Report. We will save that, and I will try and line something up for next week when the Arizona Cardinals will open a week from this Sunday against the New Orleans Saints for real football, real records. It really counts. So on behalf of Bridge of the Birds Radio, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We will talk to you next week as we talk about the final 53 and the season preview.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.